like.
Right. Okay. So I wanted to just share a small idea from Roy Sachs as I've been reading this during Caserta Shots. Roy Sachs makes a very fundamental claim about religion or monotheism in particular, and Judaism even more particular, is that it's not just that religion makes theological claims, but that one of the fundamental implications of the Torah's theology is the importance of relationships, right? And he notes that right off the bat, one of the first things you hear in Sefer Bereishit is the story of Chava being created and the complex relationship between Adam and Chava, right? They blame each other, right? But then, right, he names her the mother of all, right? Despite his anger, right? Despite his anger, right? First, and not only that, but so much of the beginning of Bereishit talks about the relationship of God and man, right? It's not just like the polytheistic religions where the stories about the gods are about their exploits and what they expect from man. But the beginning of Bereishit is about us not living up to expectations, but then God entering into conversation with us, right, and giving us clothes and things like that, right? Relationships are fundamental. When religion falls, right, relationships change. Okay, that's one of his general themes in life. But he makes a very interesting point about Bereishit, but specifically a scene in our parsha. Second, there we go. Right. So he says as follows. Right. People talk about the fact that Avram is the first, not really first, but okay, the first to publicly profess monotheism in a world which doesn't accept monotheism. That's a better thing than the first monotheist, because Adam is also monotheist. Fine. Okay. So what would you expect? Right. You would expect that what should Bereishit be about? So Sefer Bereishit, right? How he came to this belief, how he fought people over the theological belief, right? If Avram is this first monotheist, then you would say, then the story of Bereishit should emphasize monotheism, how he brought monotheism to the world, and yet that's actually right, very, very minimal. What is the fundamental difference that is, if that actually carries through as a theme between the difference of Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and the nations around them? What? Well, on proofs. If you think about his interactions, right? Let's be very specific and talk about his interactions with other nations, right? What is the difference over and over? What happens twice to Avram, right? Once to Yitzchak. Yes, very good, right? He says, the key narrative of Genesis is the story of Avram and Sarah, or Abram and Sarah, a married couple who embarks on a journey together, suffers trials and disappointments, and grows old together, but who stay faithful to one another and to God. Dreyfus and Kelly's candid polytheism helps understand why Genesis consistently portrays the world outside the covenantal family as a place of sexual enemy. Avram and Yitzchak both fear that they will be killed so their attractive wives can be taken into the royal harem. The people of Sodom attempt to commit an act of homosexual rape on two strangers. Shechem, a local prince, abducts and rapes Jacob's daughter Dinah. In Egypt, Potiphar's wife attempts to seduce Joseph. Failing, she accuses him of rape. Well, that's a midrash. So now, right? And therefore he says, Genesis does not contrast monotheism with idolatry. That comes later in the Bible. Instead, it contrasts it with a world of sexual free-for-all. Many gods means many commitments, or rather no commitment at all. Just the mood of the moment, deified, sacralized, stripped bare of any moral content, with no qualms for who one may be betraying or what the consequences may be. It's not surprising that when Dreyfus and Kelly seek contemporary examples of the sacred, they choose sport. The baseball hero Lou Gehrig, Roger Federer, the tennis master, or art, Nureyev, the ballet dancer. Sport and art are for us safe space, time out where he experienced emotions that would be devastating if we were to live by them in the real world. Right? There's a reason why the world of Homer exists no more. A world of beautiful heroines and noble warriors is also a world where the unbeautiful are inconsequential, where battlefields are strewn with corpses, where moral commitments mean nothing, and where life, when it loses its vividness, is a bore. The Hebrew Bible achieved something no other literature, sacred or secular, has ever done. It made love a moral adventure and invested marriage with metaphysical grandeur. Comparing the fidelity of husband and wife to the ideal of faithfulness between humanity and God, it turned marriage into a sacred covenant. Right? So Ray Sachs argues that, amazingly, in Sefer Bereishit, the difference between Avram, right, the monotheist, and the other world is not actually about monotheism. Right? It's about the importance of recognizing relationship. Whereas Avram and Sarah are married, right? Yitzchak and Rivka, right, extremely faithful. Yaakov, right, works for 7 years, right, for his wife, right, out of love, right? And then another 7 years, yes. And the outside world is, again, is fundamentally about people do whatever they want. They don't recognize relationships, right? They just abduct women. They rape them. That is consistently, right, in the interactions that the Avot have with the outside world, that is the theme that comes up over and over and again. And for Rai Sachs, what he derives from here is that that Bereishit is telling you that one of, if not the fundamental difference between a monotheistic and a polytheistic world, between a world of one God, right, rather than a bunch of gods who are basically people who are serving their own interests, is whether you value commitment and loyalty and relationship or not, right? And that's why in Torah, the relationship of Judaism, of the Jewish people to God, is parallel to that of a husband and a wife, and idolatry is therefore adultery, right? This idea that the fundamental ethos of Torah is about this relationship, right? Because when you have a God who is described as having a relationship with people and being committed to them, and you have to be committed to him, rather than a theology or polytheistic theology in which the gods strive for their own hedonistic pleasures, and therefore to be godly is to do the same thing. Right? For him, that is the central difference. And then obviously that's part of his theme in the book in general, that one of the things that suffers the most when religion fails is relationships, right? Is the value of marriage and family, right, and commitment to parents and to children and the like, because, right, without that theological framework, right, right, you basically end up in, I mean, as you see, right, that people do think that the highest good is what's good for me, right, hedonistically, but also, right, the fact that, yeah, people describe their relationships entirely of what are my rights and my personal expression, and the like, and he obviously goes through that this is, you know, contributed to by technology, which allows us very easily to have, you know, to have, well, right, meaning he says, right, sex without procreation and procreation without sex, right? The combination, right, a world in which technologically we push to the fact that birth control very easily splits between sexual, right, enjoyment and the creation of family and responsibility, and the fact that you can create children, right, outside of the sexual union with IVF and the like, right? The combination of that technological reality, right, allows people who are already in that mindset to devalue relationship, right? Whereas for most of history, right, that was fundamental and supported by this biblical background that sees relationship both between human beings and between God and people as fundamental to what religion meant.
And doesn't it also, he also talks about the fact that commitment is something larger than yourself.
Correct. I mean, yes. Yeah. You know, he has a lot going on in this book. It's not actually that long. No. I mean, his books read pretty quickly, meaning they're written, right, to be very friendly, audience friendly. But anyways, I thought that was an interesting insight, right? And as in this special, we get Dina and the rape, and you see, like, this is the most intense interaction that Bnei Yaakov have with a foreign power. And it's literally over this question, right, which is, HaKezona Yaser Achotenu, right, is can you, right, make our sister, like, right, a prostitute, right? Like, that is the interaction. Right, this first war that they have is over the legitimacy of just treating people like, yeah, right? It's just to say, of course we're going to fight a war. We're going to let her be, right? We're going to let her be like a prostitute, right? They just take advantage, right? And you think about, right, Hamor's whole speech. Well, if only we have a Brit Mila, then we can take their daughters and we can take their money, right? I mean, that's the whole thing, right? It's all self-serving. It's not about a relationship. It's, right? There's money and women involved, you know, whatever it takes, we'll do it, right? That's the first interaction you have between Yaakov's family or clan, right? And another nation. And that repeated pattern, I think, is really quite striking, considering that we barely have any interactions, which Avram has an interaction with someone and says, I believe in one God and you believe in multiple. Like, that literally never happens in Bereshit, which is crazy when you think of Avram's identity fundamentally as the first monotheist. Instead, what you have is interactions that focus on the sanctity of relationships. Okay.